Everyone does it slightly differently, but essentially what a locked-door policy is that people that are in acute, in this case, acute mental psychiatric wards, are essentially locked in. They can't go in or out without approval. There's usually someone on the front desk that grants that approval, so it's like a monitored form of care. And because of that, there's been a lot of discussion and debate over whether that's actually infringing on people's human rights, that, you know, they should be able to come and go as they please. A lot of them are actually voluntary. There are, you know, when you say acute mental psychiatric wards, a lot of people have certain conditions they think of that might actually make up most of those patients. But there are things like postnatal depression, for example, that actually make up a large proportion of those patients. So basically, the use of locked doors, you know, I guess it's quite self-descriptive. The doors are locked. People can only come in and out if the ward manager actually decides that that's something they can do.
What's the prevalence of these sorts of policies in Australia?
No one knows. And this is one of the biggest concerning things. So Queensland sort of copped a lot of the brunt of criticism lately, and that's almost unfortunate in a way, because they were, I guess, one of the few states that actually admitted that they were going to do it. The issue actually came to a real light in New South Wales. So, you know, Queensland's copped a lot of the criticism, but New South Wales have sort of been the people that started this whole this whole mess off. And it came across from a coronial report from someone who actually died while what they called absconding, so on leave without the ward knowing about them. And the coronial report wasn't actually to lock the wards, but to actually have a register of what the arrangements are for patients leaving the wards and coming back and monitoring them. So the New South Wales government sort of misinterpreted this to a certain extent, enacted locked doors through a lot more of their facilities than they probably should have. And Queensland sort of expanded on this and actually made it a default mechanism for their acute mental psychiatric wards.
I think a lot of people will be saying, well, you know, for many of these psychiatric cases, it's for people who aren't safe to be out in the community. So maybe locked doors are a good thing. How do you respond to those type of thoughts?
Well, that's certainly not supported by the data. So there are certainly some people that perhaps need those extra arrangements, and that's certainly not been a debate at all. Though, you know, for people that require those additional arrangements, that's been something that can be feasibly actually enacted, but also, you know, has been recommended to be enacted by most, you know, even the most, I guess, human rights abiding mental health facilities out there. The real issue is that there's, you know, you've got people that are dangerous and people that aren't dangerous basically having to be locked in through no other reason than process. You know, so there's no individual gauging of what those requirements are for those people. And, you know, what this means is that there are, you know, cases where people can't leave because the person won't let them. It's not up to them whether they can leave. It's up to the ward manager. If that ward manager, or not ward manager, but that person on the door is a friendly person, that's okay. But, you know, there are, you know, people are individuals and some people have power trips. There's been a lot of cases of, you know, people sort of denying those requests for no other reason than personality clashes. But it's that lack of autonomy that's really causing the issue, and the fact that it's actually put across everyone, not just those who need it.
What about those who are voluntarily in these psychiatric centres?
Mm.
I'm guessing they want to be there because they want to get better.
Mm.
But if they're not in the right frame of mind to stay there, what do you do in those situations?
Well, this is you know, one of the interesting things. If you look at absconding and what it actually means in the definition of that, sometimes absconding is just coming back 2 minutes late after your proposed time. So, you know, you're supposed to be back in the ward by 5 o'clock. You're in there at 5:02, you get marked down as an absconsion. But a lot of the times it's things that are, I guess, almost foreseeable. So, you know, drug addiction, for example, a lot of people leave to procure the drugs of addiction that they actually have. This, you know, is certainly not something that should be encouraged, but, you know, that perhaps is something that should be seen more as a view of, well, how do we actually support them through that drug addiction rather than just lock them in? Locking them in is not supporting them. You know, sometimes it's a lover's tryst. You know, sometimes it's to see family. Childcare arrangements are a really, really big reason for absconding for single parents and for mothers and fathers. So there's a lot of evidence actually showing that there are ways to actually make these wards more these facilities more friendly towards patients by increasing engagement with the outside community rather than actually decreasing it.
So you're saying that these types of policies aren't actually focusing on the mental health of patients. It's just kind of a band-aid solution, I guess.
Yeah, and if you look at Queensland, they essentially said as much. They said that the real reason behind this was to reduce the burden to police officers bringing these people back home. Well, not back home, but back to the facilities. So, you know, it's purely a administrative decision to reduce the burden on parties that have nothing to do with health. And there is actually a lot of evidence that's actually saying this is harmful to the patient's mental health. It's harmful to patient care. It's stressful to the workers within those facilities. So there's not one skerrick of evidence that actually suggests that this is in any way a good thing. The only way that it is a good thing is that it reduces the police requirements to bring absconders back. And, you know, do police need to even bring every absconder back? That's the other thing that needs to be put in question. So, you know, when you're looking at it from a purely economic perspective like that, you're really ignoring the real focus of mental health facilities, which is the patient themselves.
These patients already are quite vulnerable. If you are putting more strain on their mental health, what effect is this having?
Well, this is what evidence from Europe predominantly says, but also some of the evidence from Australia and New Zealand as well, is that there are barriers to getting better enacted by these sorts of arrangements. The isolation, it tends to create a aggressive patient care environment. It stresses the workers out. That stresses the patients out. It doesn't relate to it. You know, it doesn't create a good, conducive mental health environment. And, you know, the big thing is it makes them feel like prisoners. You know, it just reduces their autonomy. And anyone that you work in mental health will tell you the importance of autonomy in mental health care. And taking that away is probably one of the single worst things you can do for patient improvement out there.
So not just against patient autonomy, but I believe it's also an issue for international, in terms of international human rights.
Yep. And so if you look at the, you know, Australia's signed a number of international conventions around human rights for the disabled, it's certainly in breach of those. Unfortunately, there is it is unknown whether Australia is legally bound by them or whether they're sort of pressuring devices rather than sort of legal devices as such, but certainly in breach. But even if you look at the laws that actually enact this in Queensland, the laws require patient care to be delivered in an effective manner. And there's no evidence to show that these policies are effective. And there's a lot of evidence to show that they're very ineffective and actually reduce clinical outcomes and put both patients and staff in harm. And there's very little evidence of putting the public at less harm because of these policies. So they're actually inconsistent with the policy directives of health policy in Queensland, at least. New South Wales doesn't have the exact detail of those policies, but I'd imagine that would be very similar in New South Wales as well.
So have we seen any statistics from Queensland that have showed it's reduced or increased absconding rates?
Well, there is some evidence that's reduced absconding rates, but I think the thing that needs to be remembered is these figures are administrative figures. They're not qualitative in the sense that they're not actually a figure that shows public harm. There was no evidence to show that absconsions were in any way exposing the public to more risk than they perhaps needed to be. And I think one of the things that also needs to be considered, and it was raised in the article, and there's a lot of evidence in Australia for this, people that are dangerous that abscond still find a way to abscond. They still find a way to get around the system. So all it's doing is reducing the autonomy of those who wouldn't abscond anyway or would put the public at very small risk of absconption. And it's not really protecting them from those that they really need to be protected from anyway.
So in the face of all this evidence saying it doesn't work, have Queensland discussed repealing these laws?
Well, certainly the opposition government, the Labor government when it was in opposition, was certainly very favourable to repealing these laws. Of course, people say a lot of things when they're in opposition that they don't necessarily say in government. So it's we don't really know what's going to happen with this. It's sort of an open book at the moment. It's a bit up in the air at the moment, so the dust will settle and we'll find out. But certainly any government that's interested in evidence-based policy would not be enacting these policies.